You know, you're playing these old songs. I always wonder, did they realize when they were creating them that they were making songs that could stand a half a century and not get old?
Every musician will tell you, no way. No way. But it is a testament to a lot of these songs like America and all that. They're still being played 50 years later. It's amazing.
Well, a testament to that era, particularly, I think, that I'm not so sure a lot of what kids are listening to today is going to stand that.
I don't think so.
I call that disposable pop.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
All right, let's get to Guy in Queen Creek. He wants to talk about something that is dying he's trying to save. Welcome to the program, sir.
How you guys doing this morning?
Very good. How can we help you?
Can you hear me now?
We can hear you now.
I just got some sod, and it was free from a church. Most of it's going green, but some parts are going, like, kind of gray. What can I do to fix that?
Water. More than likely.
Well, that's not cool. I did, like, three times a day, but did I burn some of it? Because some of it's growing really well.
Well, how long was it rolled up?
Bottom pallet.
How long was it rolled up?
It was rolled for, like, I got it, like, 2 days after they got it, and then we threw it in my truck, and some of it's doing really well, and then there's a couple. There are those other maybe bottom parts that just are kind of gray.
Yep. Well, you know, sod is highly perishable. I mean, if you can imagine, we go into a lawn, and there in a sod farm's case, it's a very big lawn, and you literally go down just below the soil level, and you scrape the stuff off, and roll it up, put it on a pallet. And you ship it to a place, and you kind of do that overnight so it's not as hot and it's cooler and there's less stress on it. And it lays on that pallet all rolled up for then maybe 2 or 3 days. You know, you've probably left something out on your grass, right, over for a day or when it's hot. And see, you pull it up and see what happens to that grass. And then you cut the roots off it to boot. So some of it's going to recover. You know, there might be a few places that don't, depending on how dried out it got in that process. But if you're watering three times a day, you're probably doing about all you can do. And it's just, you'll see what regenerates. The nice thing about our hybrid Bermuda grasses is they do also fill in from stolons and roots, and they spread. And, you know, so some of those areas will fill in from the surrounding areas that are viable. But,
and that might not happen till next spring when the next real growing season hits.
He's got a lot of time yet. You got half of August and all of September and maybe even part of October. So there's a good amount of time, and this is really a great time because it's hot, which is what that stuff likes. The humidity gets up a little bit. This is when the Bermuda grasses are really at their peak of happiness. And so, you know, that's all good. One thing I probably wouldn't do is plant a winter lawn in that when you're sodding this late. Let it grow as long as it can grow. Let it go dormant. You know, don't put a competitor right in there on top of it and that sort of thing. So might not be a bad idea this first winter to let it to not have a winter lawn growing in it. But there's really not much else you can do. So I've seen sod do some pretty amazing things when it looked pretty crappy. It just takes a little while sometimes.
A little while and a little water.
Yep.
Before we get a
lot of water.
Before we get to Garth and Tucson, let's talk about that a little bit further. If somebody is going to be transitioning to a winter lawn, it seems like from memory, it was the beginning of September was the start to start planting. That seems to have gotten pushed back.
Hopefully, because that's just too early, especially now that we seem to stay warmer longer into the falls. We seem to stay cooler longer into the spring and early summer, and hotter longer into the falls, into the fall and winter. I would not even think about scalping, and we don't scalp like we used to either. We've found that that's not the best technique or the best practice. Mid-October, I think, is just kind of the really the for home gardeners. Remember, you're not a golf course. You're not trying to get this in time to capture revenues in October when all the people show up from out of town that want to play golf and paid money to do it.
And you don't have a crew that can go out there and overseed and patch areas. And I've even seen them paint the lawn green.
Absolutely. They do some painting. So I would think middle of October is the start. Maybe the end of October is actually optimal for a home lawn. And so right then, now what you ought to be doing is trying to get your Bermuda as healthy as you can, because what you're going to do to it isn't really the best thing to do to it either. So, you know, you're gonna cut all the growth off and then put a competitor right in on top of it. And there for a period of about a month or 6 weeks, they're going to both want to grow. Now, this competitor is going to outgrow the Bermuda and shade it out and kind of force it into dormancy before the cold weather does. So in a perfect world, we would probably let that lawn go dormant. You know, might be Thanksgiving time, then plant the winter rye on top of it.
Take that strategy. You still have to buy your seed in September and October because there won't be any left by the time November comes.
Correct. And the disadvantage of that is then the rye is pretty slow to germinate. I'm not necessarily advocating that you do that, but I would say at least wait till the middle of October. So what you want to be doing right now is probably fertilizing your Bermuda grass one more time. Making sure it's watered and healthy and vibrant. And then, you know, just don't do anything different until maybe the very end or middle or end of September. Then you might want to start mowing it a little slower. As the growth slows down, you can start taking it down and gradually lower your mowing to a height where you could look at the lawn and say, okay, the seed can get down past the canopy of the grass and make contact with the soil. And that's about as hard as you want to mow it. We don't advocate taking these lawns right down to the dirt like we used to back in the old day, which is great with me because that's a lot of work. It's dusty. It's nasty. And then you got to worry, but what do I do with all these clippings?
Scrapes up your blades.
Yeah. What do I do with all these clippings, that sort of thing. And don't dethatch. Dethatching should be done in June, not as a method to overseed.
And if you're going to plant mid-October, how many weeks prior to that do you shut the water off?
Well, I'm not a huge advocate of shutting it off other than to long enough that it's easier to mow to get that last short mowing down. So maybe just a few days.
All right, let's get to Garth at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE-4U. How may we help you, Garth?
How you doing, Jay? Oh, I had a question before you launched into the lawns about following up on evergreen shade. There's a Lepos, which you see the big bushy ones around Tempe, et cetera, here as well. And then there's another variety that's supposedly a little bit bushier and does better. Is a natural environment, southwest basin, create shade, something that's...
You're talking about pine trees.
Yeah.
After we planted nothing but Aleppo pines here, basically, up until about, I don't know, maybe the mid to late 70s, and then the Eldarica pine was brought in. And it's more pine. It's more conical in shape. It doesn't get as broad. It's more a uniform grower. Probably doesn't get as big. Certainly doesn't get near as wide or have a canopy like an Aleppo pine. That's what you probably see more of now than even Aleppos are Eldarica pines.
And I've heard a lot of the tree growers talking about Afghan pines now. Is that the same or is that yet another variety of pine?
Well, Afghan, so Aleppo is in Syria, right? And Eldarica are all from that
Mediterranean
Afghanistan, Pakistan, Syria, mountainous areas. And that's where they're all from. But so that could be what they're talking about. And you've got to remember that when we planted a lot of pines here, most people had grass lawns or planter beds that were planted with a lot of plantings underneath them. So they got pretty good amounts of water. If you're going to plant them in a gravel area, you got to make sure you got plenty of drippers and, you know, they're not necessarily high water use trees, but you want to make sure you're watering them properly as well. We're seeing a lot of stress related problems with pine trees over the last number of years. And there could be a lot of explanations for that, but I think a lot of it just has to do with how we water, with drip watering and not near as much water per watering when we're putting water on.
Well, we appreciate the call. Hopefully that answered your question. On the pines, I do like, and we've talked about this a long time. From our property, you look south and you see the White Tank Mountains.
Okay.
And that's also a vacant lot. Uh-huh. And we keep talking, do we just enjoy this as long as we can until there's
the view,
eventually uh-huh. a house there?
Yeah.
Or do we go ahead? I love those horse properties where you see a row of pines on
yeah,
them.
Right.
Or do we go ahead and put a row of pines on the south side so at the point the house is there, we're at least looking at trees and not the neighbor?
Well, you know, the best time to plant a tree was 25 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, even if you plant now and somebody builds in a few years, you're still going to be behind the curve on that. So if it's ultimately going to be built on, and
more than likely
is, then, and you don't want to see it, then I would say bite the bullet now, because you're still going to have a view for a few years. It's not like those trees, you know, are
right.
going to be instant block of the view. So I would probably get ahead of the game and get it done.
And to stay true to that, you know, 3/4 century old style of mm-hmm. Aleppo pines, I was going to go that route. You can hardly find them. Nobody, they all want to sell
Aleppos,
the Afghan.
Yeah. The Afghan or Eldarica pine is just kind of taken over. And in reality, it probably does make a better row tree though, because it does stay more uniform, in planting. If you go down Cactus Road east of Hayden, the old Scottsdale Country Club, or Starfire now it's called, on the south side.
Okay.
There's a really nice row of Eldarica pines that kind of that kind of border, semi-screen the golf course from Cactus Road. Get an idea what that probably would look. There's a lot of them around, but that's the first one that comes to mind.
Let's get to Raymond and see how we can help him this Saturday morning. Well, I'm sorry. Raymond, I don't do that often. I didn't look at the clock first. We can do a lot of things, but we can't stop the clock. We'll come back right after this and go to you.